David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. We are talking today with Chairman Omali Yeshitela from the African Socialist People's Party about the Uhuru 3. Chairman, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. It's really important to us because there's been a kind of information blockade, encirclement that we've had to contend with for a long period of time. And the fact is, I'm facing prison right now because the establishment does not want me to be able to communicate with people. So thank you so much. And it's the African People's Socialist Party.
I'm sorry, I always do that. Chairman Omali, first of all, can you tell me a little bit about yourself and about the African People's Socialist Party? And well, then we'll talk about the Uhuru, about the recent trial.
Surely. The fact is, last month, I was 83 years old, and I've been involved in the struggle for more than 60 years. I grew up in a small southern city, not necessarily recognized as such because it's in Florida, and there's this image that people have of Florida of hurricanes, alligators, and sunshine and beaches. But I grew up in St. Petersburg, Florida. I joined the U.S. military just after I turned 18 years old because I felt like that the restrictions that I experienced in life as a African person had to do with living in a small southern city. I learned quickly that that was not the case. I did join the U.S. military. I ended up in Berlin, Germany. And I was there in 1962 when the Berlin Wall went up. I was in one of the first U.S. tanks facing Russian tanks in combat mode. I left Berlin, came back to Fort Benning, Georgia, and as a consequence of struggles that I participated in, initiated on the base in Fort Benning, Georgia, I demanded that John F. Fitzgerald Kennedy, who was then the president, release me from the service. I sent him a 13-page letter telling him I couldn't serve anymore. I went on strike while I was there. I was shortly thereafter, I was given a general discharge under honorable conditions. I was put on a truck under armed guard and taken to the off post and left. I joined the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee some months later. And Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, people who were for me with the organization knew of it as SNCC. That's how the organization was characterized at that time. It was an extraordinarily important organization in terms of the history of our struggle and the history of struggle inside this country. SNCC was that organization primarily of young people, as implied by a Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And it was that bridge between the anti-racism civil rights movement and the anti-colonial Black Power movement. It was SNCC who introduced the demand slogan Black Power to the world in 1966. So I was attracted to that organization. And I organized the first Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee chapter in St. Petersburg, Florida, the first actual membership-based Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee any place in the country. And I went to prison. I was arrested in December of 1966 due to a protest that SNCC had organized about a 8x10 mural that was hanging on the wall, had been there for more than 30 years, of the city council that depicted African people in caricature with huge pink lips covering most of our face, distended limbs, arms, and what have you. And after being brushed off a very condescending way by the government there, I led a demonstration that resulted in tearing the mural from the wall. I was charged with 11 offenses for having done that. I was tried for doing that in a municipal court and sentenced to 6 months in prison. Then I was tried in court for on the state level, a county courthouse, and was given a 5-year prison sentence for that. And I spent about 2.5 years in prison. I was in and out of prison around that. I won the case in the Supreme Court formally, officially, because the first trial in the municipal court was for destruction of public property. And the second trial on grand larceny, that was the felony, was a charge of taking something from the legal owner and with intent to prevent them from getting it back. And the intent was the fact that I destroyed it. So it was actually a try for twice for the same thing, destruction of that mural. So the Supreme Court ruled that that was improper and if such, and then remanded it back to the state of Florida. The state of Florida indicated that's not what was really the case, and then they tried me again. So this is the third time I'm being tried for the same thing, even though the Supreme Court ruled formally in my favor in terms that this was double jeopardy. If what happened is what I described, it solved the problem for them in terms of handling the convictions trial for the same offense in two different jurisdictions. But it left me with the prison, and I was tried again for the third time for the same charge, and was convicted again and sentenced to 3 years in prison. So I was in and out of prison for 2.5 years around that case. And I came out, organized, while I was in prison, I organized the Hunter of Militant Organizations, JOMO, which was an attempt to pull together all of those different organizations that were characterized as militants at the time to distinguish us from groups like the NAACP and the traditional civil rights, an attempt to unify them. That's where the Hunter came from. It was during the time in prison also that I concluded that we had to move beyond just protest politic and toward the actual capture and wielding of political power. And that's when we decided that a party was the best instrument for that. And we built the African People's Socialist Party. That was in 1972 when the African People's Socialist Party was created. And it's been on this trajectory since that time. The Uhuru movement has expanded in a lot of different ways with different entities associated with that movement. We are an international organization, having concluded a while ago that the struggle of Black people had run into its limitations when fought within the context of the borders that had been imposed on Africa and African people globally. It was an international struggle, part of the same struggle, One Africa, One Nation. So we built the African Socialist International. It's an organization, it's an international organization, and we have branches and people who are affiliated and associated with us throughout the continent of Africa, in the Caribbean, throughout Europe, here in the United States.
Thank you. Chairman Amali, I'm going to ask you a couple of times throughout the interview, but if people want to learn about the African People's Socialist Party, where can they go online to find out about your organization?
I would really call on people to go to APSP. And that's an abbreviation for African People's Socialist Party. APSP Uhuru, UHURU, .org. And there you can get much of the information. Right now, we are prevalent really much so on a site that's called Hands Off Uhuru, handsoffuhuru.org. And that's important because it also is associated with the current work that we're doing to defend ourselves from the fabricated charges by the United States government that that has put us on trial and that has convicted me for something, for a thought crime. I'm going to trial on that in December. And so handsoffuhuru.org is another place. You get all kinds of information about us and what people can do should they want to support this case and advance the struggle of colonized people, and African in particular, for liberation.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about, I mean, what you feel like sharing? Yeah, can you tell us what happened? How did the trial turn out, and what are the next steps?
Well, I think the reason that we were attacked at this time is because the whole system is experiencing a severe crisis. It's a system that we characterize as consisting of a colonial mode of production. Most people who look into political science and study political science have accepted the notion of modes of production as being the how society participates collectively in producing life, that is food, clothes, shelter, the reproduction of ourselves as people. But this issue of colonial mode of production is something that has not been adequately pursued. And colonial mode of production recognizes that the system that we are confronted with, all of us in the whole world, it rests on a foundation of the attack that began something like 600 years ago when Portugal, which was almost a non-entity, but it came into Africa, it attacked Africa. It initiated a process of colonial domination and enslavement of African people that spread throughout the world. Much of what you look at when you look at the Americas as they are characterized is a consequence of this initiation of colonial slavery, and whole colonial process. And the whole of Europe, what came to be Europe, got involved in this process. So the prosperity of Europe and Europeans who are even in settler colonies like the United States, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, et cetera, the prosperity rests upon the foundation of colonized people. And so every time, this is a serious problem because every time colonized people involve ourselves in struggle, it shakes the foundation of this country. It creates economic crisis. It creates questions in the minds of colonizers who have been taught consistently that the world revolves around the colonized, that the colonizers, are the subjects of history, and we who are colonized are simply objects of history. So you have a minority of human beings in these states throughout the world, including the United States, who preside over all of the world's resources and control most of the world's processes. Up until 1940-something, England, for example, occupied, had you know, that used to brag about being an empire upon which the sun never sets. England controls something like more than a quarter of the world's population and more than a quarter of the world's territory. England, as you know, is this island that's nearly barren in terms of what kinds of resources it produces for itself, but it collects all these resources from peoples around the world. This is the foundation of this whole system. This is the basis of attacking people in places in the Middle East and Palestine and all these places, because the resources of the rest of the world are what feeds this minority population that has developed all the guns and structures and what have you to maintain their power at the expense of the rest of us. And so here we are, and the African People's Socialist Party, having assumed the responsibility to complete a revolutionary project that we had initiated in the 1960s. When I say we, I'm talking about the whole colonized world and certainly African people in this country. We said we're going to complete that. We were not fighting at this time. We had developed beyond the struggle against racism. We were struggling against colonialism. That's what the Black Panther Party was about. That's what Malcolm X was about. And that's what even Dr. Martin Luther King had to contend with when he talked about America being the greatest purveyor of violence on earth. And so this is the movement that was crushed when they assassinated Malcolm, when they killed the Black Panther Party, and even when they killed Martin Luther King. It was because we had come to that place where we were not satisfied with trying to integrate, as King would say, into a burning house, that we needed a new structure. We needed a whole capacity to feed, clothe, and house ourselves without having to be on our bellies all the time in a state of supine, you know, surrender. Our party reconnected the African world. This is the first time it had happened since Marcus Garvey, where we had actual organization and do have organizations in South Africa, in Zambia, in Namibia, in Ghana, and Sierra Leone, in Liberia, and throughout Africa. And we are in places like Jamaica and Grenada, in the Bahamas, in the Caribbean. We have organization in France and England and here in the United States. So we're pulling all of that together at a time where the entire global system is being rent, where there's a problem, where there's an actual reconfiguration of the economic, of the economy, the political and economic world is happening. I mean, people are looking at BRICS, people are looking at Venezuela trying to carry out a mission for its own liberate Palestine. All the peoples on earth are involved in this struggle. And here we are in the middle of it in the United States. United States is contending also with the reemergence of Russia as a factor internationally that has intruded on what the United States has concluded to be its space, its in the Middle East. You have and even in Africa, and then you have China, which has become the largest economic force on the continent of Africa, pushing out France, pushing out the United States, etc. So this is a troubling situation that challenges the entire status quo. And the African People's Socialist Party is working in all those places. And we have given, we are giving Africa a single voice so that we can no longer, it becomes increasingly difficult to play one African entity against another for our resources. While France has been able to access all of our resources in different places in Africa, controlling more than 14 different so-called countries or states there, African people ourselves in Africa don't have access to the same kinds of territories. In fact, I think we had read that only from something like 5 to 7% of the trade among Africans in Africa happens among Africans. The rest of it is exploitation that comes from colonial powers, former colonial powers, et cetera. So we are in the mix in a very serious way at a very troubled time for the system. And so, as I said, that you have a situation where the United States is contending with Russia, contending with China, contending with Iran, contending with Venezuela, contending with all of these countries that have been colonized countries, that have been ruled and controlled. You talk about Iran, for example, in 1952, 53, I've forgotten which, the United States government overthrew the legitimately elected president, Mohammad Mossadegh, in Iran, and put this horrible dictator in place. And it was only 1979 that the people overthrew this. And this created a problem between the United States and what is now the Iranian government. You can look all around the world and see similar kinds of incidents related to the whole colonial enterprise and how the colonizers being pushed out around the world. And even
Chairman, in Mali?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I know that we could probably talk about this for at least a full hour, if not longer. But I want to make sure that we get to a couple more things in the interview.
Please do.
First, I just want to let everybody know we're talking right now with Chairman Omali Yeshitela from the African People's Socialist Party. And the reason that we have you on Prison Pipeline today is because on October 10th, the Uhuru 3 filed for a judgment of acquittal in the free speech case in which you were recently tried, and you're facing sentencing. So, can you tell me? Can you give me an update on where that motion is, and what are you looking? What are the next steps regarding the trial that you? I mean, regarding the possibility of you and Hess and Neville possibly facing prison time. Can you tell us what's going on with that, and how can people support you?
On December 6th, we'll be in Tampa, Florida, at the federal court there, December 16th, I should say. And during that time, we are going to be sentenced for the crime of conspiracy. And this was one of two charges that we were tried for. And in September 12th, a jury found us not guilty of being Russian agents, which is what the U.S. government charged us with. And they also charged us with conspiracy. To be Russian agents. So the jury said we were not guilty of working for Russians. We were not Russian agents. And we showed all the evidence, and it was clear they concluded we were just working for black people on the one hand. On the other hand, the jury convicted us of conspiracy to be Russian agents. So they convicted us for something that didn't happen. They convicted us for something they said we didn't do. So it's an extraordinary situation to be in, and it's very dangerous. And it's dangerous because, in the first place, a conviction on working for Russian agents, being Russian agents, would have meant that any criticism that black people and others make of the United States government's treatment of black people in this country could have been brushed off as not being true. That the United States is wonderful, and if you don't believe it, look at Kamala Harris and Obama. And therefore, it's Russians who are doing this, that we have no legitimate claims, no legitimate criticism that we can make of the United States government. So the jury said that's not the case. But the jury said we involved in a conspiracy, which we have to conclude is a thought crime, because they said we didn't do what they said we did in terms of practice. So that was the problem. That's the thing we're stuck with. And the thought crime is punishable by 5 years in prison. So our lawyers in October, our lawyers filed a motion for they're ca calling on the judge to issue a direction of acquittal, a direct acquittal. You know, we know what the jury said, but we're calling for the judge to dismiss that and to offer acquittal because of the inconsistency of the verdict itself. And the prosecution has opposed that and done something like a 32 page, a 30 some odd page position saying that that shouldn't happen. And so that is something that's still there. And we'll be going to trial on the 16th, and we're in December, and we're calling on people to join us. We've had people provide something like 1,600 letters of support of us. And we've had people participating in demonstrations at the trial itself in September. There were hundreds of people who came out, filled up the largest courtroom they had, and the spaces that they had created for overflow. And we want people to be there this time again. We want it to be so that that the court has to be confronted with the fact that there are hundreds and thousands of people here in this country and around the world who recognize that this is a political trial, and that the people, represent a part of the political body in this country who disagree with what's happening. So that's really important. So if we can get people, we want people to go to Hands Off Uhuru .org, go to handsoffuhuru.org, and get all the information that you can about this, that's available about this. And we also want people to come to Tampa, Florida. Come to Tampa, Florida. and be there at the sentencing. And that's going to be very important. If you can come on the 15th, we're going to have a rally on the 15th, discussions on the 15th, and then there's the sentencing on the 16th. And so we want people to be there for the sentencing. And depending on what happens at the trial, at the sentencing, whether or not we would be sent immediately and directed to prison, or whether we do or not, there's going to be a rally and discussion conference in St. Petersburg, Florida. So that's going to be on the 15th, and that's going to be after the verdict, the sentencing on the 16th.
Thank you, Chairman. We're talking with Chairman Omali Yeshitela about the case of the Uhuru 3 who filed a judgment. They filed a request for a judgment of acquittal in a free speech case regarding the Uhuru 3. Chairman, with just the last couple of minutes that we have in the show, is there anything that you haven't shared yet that you'd like to make sure to get a word out regarding either this case or anything else that we've talked about today?
Well, I want to speak specifically about this case because while it's true that this is a case about First Amendment, free speech, the Bill of Rights and things like that, it's more than that. In general, everybody is threatened by what has happened to us in this case, and especially since it moves toward the area of thought crime with this conspiracy charge. We've seen them use it against the Panther 21. We've seen it used against movements for a long period of time in this country. The first time it's ever been used this way, they used this law just to deal with speech. So it's a very dangerous thing. But we also want people to be conscious of the fact that when the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment, were ratified by the United States Congress, it was 1791. In 1791, African people were considered property, had no rights at all. And the fact is that when they attack us on the issue of free speech, it's not our rights exactly that's being attacked because we never had them. That's why the Civil Rights Bill, Voting Rights Act, and all this other kind of stuff, and Black people just trying to get rights there's a presumption of presence, you know, here in this country. So everybody's threatened by this because they would attack people who they presume to be unpopular and use that as a means by which to attack the rights of everybody. So when they attack free speech rights, it's not my rights. It's not Black people's rights because we never had it, but it's your rights. And then we want everybody to understand that this is what's happening. And you should come out. You should defend us because you're defending yourself when you defend the right of free speech, the right of freedom of association, freedom of assembly, and the rights of Black people to organize to be a free people. So I want to thank you, comrade, for giving us this forum and giving us this opportunity to speak to your base, Uhuru. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We've been talking today with Chairman Omali Yeshitela of the African People's Socialist Party. Chairman Omali, thank you so much for joining us today on Prison Pipeline.
Thank you.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. We'll be right back.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kbu.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.